5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
World Cup of Tea, day 21. The tournament semi-finals are halfway completed. Some famous names are leaving us. You know where we're going here. An exciting day, a highly stressful day of games. And I mean that both quarterfinals that were played today, Croatia-Brazil and then Argentina-Holland, both going all the way through extra time and then all the way through to the penalty shootout decider. Two big names went home. Unavoidable in one game in Holland-Argentina, which turned out to be, I'm not going to say it was a classic, not in the traditional sense. When you think of a classic, you think of something that is high quality, quite pure in how it unfolds. This was a classic, but in kind of a more messy, crumbly way. I said messy. I don't mean Lionel Messi. I mean Messi is in a bit of a state. It was all quite crumbly and at times a little bit bitty. Argentina led 2-0 with about 7 or 8 minutes to go. Holland pulled one back and then were able to equalize in the 10th minute of time added on. Quite a few fouls. A referee that wasn't always quite sure of what he was doing. At least two moments, apparently, when the benches cleared. I saw one on TV. The other one I didn't see, but I heard it being referenced to. And then a penalty shootout, obviously ultimately decided by some incredible saves by the Argentinian goalkeeper, Emi Martinez. But then even after that, words between Lionel Messi and members of the Dutch bench, Edgar Davids, assistant coach and Dutch legend, the head coach, Louis van Gaal. There is a picture you can find on the internet of the moment that the decisive penalty is taken, the Argentinian players running immediately towards their goalkeeper, but only steps away from the Dutch. It looks like in the photo that about half a dozen of them are taunting the Dutch. It was a shame. One of the worst things about being a spectator, whether you're in the stadium or watching on TV, is you're never quite sure about all the stuff that's super interesting. The bad blood, whatever had gone on. It didn't seem to be. It was a fractious game rather than an ill-tempered one. No one was sent off. But I'm sure there's more to come there. But anyway, as it is, the Dutch go home and Argentina head to the semifinals, where they will play. Brazil? No. Croatia?
I can't believe it. I can't believe it. Football, bloody hell.
I've taken a bit of heat in my social circles from my show a couple of days ago, where I put my flag in the ground and said, I don't like Brazil. And now that they're out, I'm not going to gloat. I feel it's important that I kind of expand on my position. As it turns out, today's game is a wonderful example of where I'm coming from. Brazil went out there. They were on the front foot for most of the game. That's not a surprise, because realistically, Croatia's tactic is to soak it all up and then hope for a break late in the game, whether that be in the game itself or in a penalty shootout. It's worked for them before on a number of occasions in the last 4 years. What's to say it wouldn't work again? So Brazil were on the front foot, couldn't make a breakthrough in normal time. Game goes to extra time. They take the lead with a truly wonderful goal.
Oh, what a goal! Oh, that's a magnificent goal!
I think it was like double 1-2s, about 7 passes, and then Neymar, in a blink of an eye, the ball is in the back of the net. And you think, there you go, done and dusted, Brazil through. And then, and these are not my words, these are the words of Alexi Lalas, US soccer legend, via Fox TV here in the US. It's amazing. I am now putting myself firmly in the Alexi Lalas camp. He said Brazil acted entitled. thought they'd won it. Got a little sloppy. Which is a mistake against the Croatians, a team who have spent the past hour and three quarter clearly proving that they will run themselves until there is no ground left to run on. Well, with about 3 minutes to go, Croatia, basically through hard work and running, and a combination of Brazil thinking, ah, it's okay, nothing's going to happen, they're able to equalize. Game goes to penalties. I think it was decided on, I think Brazil had a, Brazil missed their fourth. They'd missed one, they had one saved early, they missed their fourth, and that was it, done and dusted. Brazil go home. And I've been reading this afternoon that their manager, Tite, I think as he is known, he who I, and of course the great Roy Keane, were very critical for their dancing with their players when their team scored. He's already quit. He's gone. Apparently the reaction in Brazil has not been good. The press have gone right after the team. Right after the team, they've gone after the manager, who has defended himself with such wisdom as the fifth penalty is always the most important. That's why I had Neymar there. Well, Neymar, arguably your best player, well, he didn't have any bearing on the shootout because he never took a kick. And anyone who's in the game knows, anyone who's been around the game knows that in a penalty shootout, all penalties are equal, but some are more equal than others. And I know there will be more shootouts in this tournament. Still has five meaningful games to go, including today's pair. The first penalty is important because it really sets you up right to make your first one. Teams that miss their first one, oof, all of a sudden, psychologically, you're up against it. The next most important penalty, everyone knows this, is the fourth. Very rare does a shootout not go four rounds. But as Brazil found out today, they don't always go five. So Brazil have gone home. Hopefully Neymar did not trip up as he was walking down to board the aeroplane. Yeah, I get to be a little bit bitchy, and I'm going to come across now as a bit of a hater. My immediate defense is, well, look, nationalism brings out the worst in everyone. I've said before that the World Cup is a chance to wrap yourself in your flag and fall back on all those prejudiced, stereotypical positions about your own country and about other countries. And hear me real straight. I don't dislike Brazil, the nation. I don't dislike their other athletes. I just got a problem with their football team. But I said that the other day. So let me talk up Brazil. One of the greatest, I had a couple of eye-opening, fascinating experiences when I went to the Olympics. One was being lucky enough to have tickets to the badminton men's individual final. Now, Olympic badminton is dominated by Asian countries. The Chinese, the Indonesians, Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, Singapore. Badminton is huge out there. My father explained to me, oh yeah, the fig industry in the Far East, a lot of it revolves around men's badminton. And I was in this cramped arena, Wembley Arena, which is actually next to Wembley Stadium, an old-fashioned, boxy, almost like a college gym type arena, with about 4,000 other people watching the men's individual final between a guy from China and a guy from Indonesia. And apparently, every expat in London had got tickets to that. Outrageous. The atmosphere, the emotion. Oh my gosh. The Chinese guy lost. I think he was the favorite. He wept like a small child. It was huge, and I'm watching this sport that even I'm not truly familiar with, thinking, I don't know who these dudes are, but that guy right there, the one, the winner, the Indonesian guy, he's just become a legend. Incredible. Second most favorite experience was going to a men's volleyball doubleheader at an old arena called Earl's Court. Great Britain played Australia first. Great Britain volleyball is not up to much. Great Britain won. I thought, yeah, this is great. The second game, and this was in group play in the round robin, and again, I'm no expert. I kind of know who's good. I'm no expert. Was Russia versus Brazil. Two volleyball heavyweights. One, the athleticism, the power, the technique, the skill, and we had really good seats. It was incredible to watch. My jaw dropped. Incredible. What was more incredible to me was the number of Brazilians who'd shown up in the standard uniform of Brazilian national team soccer jersey. And, you know, Brazil playing the same colors and everything. They showed up in their masses. And all of a sudden, in the seats we were after the Great Britain game had kind of cleared out, you had tickets for the doubleheader. All of a sudden, I was surrounded by Brazilian fans. Young, old, men, women. People dressed up. People with instruments. People with flags. And all of a sudden, this indoor arena was transformed into this yellow and blue and green. Incredible. And the atmosphere and their appreciation for the game, unsurpassed. And my eyes were opened. I knew, oh, yeah, you know, the volleyball's big in Brazil, but it's all about the soccer. No, it's not. Their reactions, their intensity, I'm talking about the spectators, beyond the pale. There was a dude in a chicken outfit. I mean, it was unbelievable. I'd never seen anything like it. And for me, and again, I'm not a volleyball aficionado, so there was a certain level of naivety on my part in terms of what I was stepping into, a certain level of, oh, wow, they get into this. Unbelievable. The passion, oh my gosh, terrific. But as I've said the other day, I am a bit of a hater when it comes to Brazil. Brazil men's soccer. Everyone's favorite other team. Well, not mine. I've got my teams. Brazil are not one of them. And I'm also the sort of person that once you have your teams, it's suddenly hard to jump on someone else's bandwagon. If I'm watching a neutral game, in general, I'm kind of finding a reason for wanting one team to lose. And I know that says an awful lot about me. I've got allegiances for who I want to do well. It's a very short list. Arsenal Football Club. Georgetown Basketball. Team GB. The England football team. And to a lesser extent, Scotland. Because I'm a quarter Scottish. Those are my teams. So I'm not jumping on the Dutch bandwagon or the French bandwagon or the Brazilian bandwagon. And fair or foul, maybe I don't support Brazil because they are everyone else's favorite other team. And I want to pick up on something that I covered yesterday in my review of the Glory game. Defeat is always far more interesting than victory. I am always more fascinated in the aftermath of defeat than the aftermath of victory. At least when it's two teams that I'm not invested in. Yeah, Croatia were a great story. But I'm not that interested in why they were able to gut it out again. I find it far more fascinating to find out why Brazil, a blue blood, are going home early. Argentina-Holland. Yeah, I want to know about the bad blood. I want to know the Dutch reaction to whatever was said after the game when Lionel Messi is in Louis van Gaal's face. The ecstasy of victory, the agony of defeat. Defeat is always a far more interesting story than victory. And this is a reflection of me. I've already put out there that I'm a hater, so I'm not looking for any kind of redemption. Defeat is this wonderful leveler. I used this tennis example the other day about Roger Federer. The only moment when Roger Federer and I are the same person is when he loses. When he's winning, he's immortal. He is living in some tennis stratosphere that's a gazillion universes above me. But if he's sitting on his backside, having been beaten by someone, then you know something? I can actually identify with that. And I like Roger Federer. I don't root for him to lose. I can identify as a regular Joe with defeat. I'm not. Never have been, never will be someone who's going to be president of the world, score goals for England, win a badminton gold medal. I, like the bulk of us, am just someone going through life. And sports is a way to appreciate and get excited by other people excelling. But you know something? It's nice sometimes to be reminded of, not mortality, that's too strong a word. Because in a strange way, you appreciate greatness through defeat. And Brazil, who when it comes to soccer, have spent decades reminding us nicely, with Rio Carnival style, of their greatness. Well, when you lose, well, I feel you, man. Because, you know, on a daily basis, that's what I've got in common with you.
You said their headpiece only had markings on one side. You absolutely sure? Belloc's staff is too long.
They're digging in the wrong place. I am the monarch of the sea. I am the ruler of the...
All right, bad dates. Yes, today, not a good day. Not a good day. Both our wagers, both our figs are now lost. Obviously, we picked Brazil to win the nil. They were not able to do that. They did do the 2-0 part after 90 minutes. They just couldn't find a way to win in regulation, so we lost the fig there. And we were dead close. When Holland tied the game up, if they'd won in penalties, we would have won at plus 140 to go through. But as it is, our record is now 11-12, and we are down to 1.9 figs. And if that's a bummer for you, I hear ya. But hey, at no moment in the last 3 weeks have I told you that fig trading was going to be some Niagara Falls of figs falling out of the sky at you. No, you got to work for it. And again, we've got our two wagers for later today. We're going to work for it. All right, we're going to finish with something slightly different today. We're going to go beyond soccer. Gentleman died this week called Jet Black. He was a drummer with the band, the English band, The Stranglers, who started life in 1974 as not quite a prog rock band, but they were a rock band. And then with the advent of punk and new wave, they stuck around and, you know, under the leadership of Jet Black, the drummer, and a guy called Hugh Cornwall, they were able successfully for about 2 decades to dip their toe into every trend in British pop slash rock music. They were quite punkish during the punk era of the late 70s. And then as popular music became slightly more new wave, they were able to adjust their sound. They've got some great albums. They have a super hardcore following, or they did have a super hardcore following back in the UK. And it is interesting. You know, I've got one of their albums from like 1977, and I listen to it, and it's great. And I have another album from 10 years later, and I listen to it, and it's different, and it's great, and yet I can tell it's the same band. That, to me, is musical talent. To retain your identity, but look at different styles. Kind of un-Brazilian. Anyway, Jet Black passed this week. I think he had health issues, but he was relatively old. I mean, he was in his 70s. I mean, he was actually 84. And anyway, as the Stranglers are one of my favorite bands, I figured I would find a way to get out of the show with the Stranglers. And here's part of the problem. Because you know, they're a punk rock new wave band, it's kind of hard to find an instrumental. But I did find something called Waltz in Black from one of their albums, I think 1978, and I don't have it in front of me which one it was, but we're going to get out of here. Let me see if this is working. Oh, it is working. So you've got an organ playing here. There's going to be bass. There's going to be lead guitar. There's going to be percussion. There's going to be drums. And you're sitting here thinking, what the heck is this? Well, this is a band, and there are very few bands that could be all things. And I know you're sitting here going, I never, no, Zeph, no. So you may have heard their song Peaches, which has this throbbing lead guitar riff to it. No More Heroes, which has a drum beat just hammering away. And then, of course, their famous song that's been in many movies called Golden Brown, which I think has harpsichord in it and a bit of organ and just incredible. An unbelievably talented band. I implore you, go to iTunes. I'm trying to think of what's my favorite Stranglers album? I think from like 77, I think it's Radicus Norvegicus. Which I don't mean anything, but just dip into that and it's great. Anyway, Jet Black, for being part of the sounds of my youth. Wherever you are, mate, this one is for you. All right, in the words of the absentee executive producer, take care.